and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Mr. Emerson?
Here.
Ms. Ladishevsky? Absent. Mr. Gregory?
Present.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Steele?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis is absent. Ms. Weldon?
Here.
And Mayor Kels?
Here. Thank you. Special Orders Business. I'll begin special order of business with a proclamation not listed as a proclamation for the Juneau Cleanup Day. If you haven't seen any of these signs around town, be aware of them. We also have a bag, don't we?
It's somewhere. It's all probably ringing.
And before I begin the proclamation, I'd like to acknowledge and thank Rudy and Judy Ripley, who helped found Litter Free. Rudy Ripley passed away this April 6th. Juneau Community Cleanup Day Proclamation. Whereas keeping Juneau clean has been a community priority since 1916. You'd think by now we'd have it figured out. When the city of Juneau Mayor B.D. Stewart announced that a general cleanup campaign should be inaugurated and that the papers and citizens in general should cooperate in the matter of urging the cleanup of the entire city. And whereas we are still at it today, 102 years later, and whereas Litter Free Incorporated and its community partners have coordinated this year's cleanup to be held this coming Saturday, April 28th, and whereas trash bags and other supplies will be available to the public on Saturday morning from 8 to 10 at the following location: Delta Western, Foodland IGA, Douglas Fire Hall, Western Auto, Fred Meyers, Super Bear IGA, Duck Creek Market, and Squires. And whereas it is a high priority of the mayor and assembly to maintain a litter-free capital city for the residents of and visitors to the city and borough of Juneau. Now, therefore, I, Kendall D. Kelch, mayor of the city and borough of Juneau, Alaska, do hereby proclaim the day of April 28th, 2018, as Juneau Community Cleanup Day. The second order of business is a proclamation for Public Service Recognition Week. Whereas each week since 1985, the first week in May is set aside as Public Service Recognition Week in appreciation of the thousands of dedicated people who serve the public. And whereas this week is set aside to acknowledge those government employees who best exemplify the spirit and sacrifice public service requires. And whereas government employees are committed to excellence in public service, making countless contributions to our nation every day at local, state, and federal levels to keep us safe in our communities and improve the quality of our lives. And whereas men and women in public service defend our nation, enforce the laws, maintain transportation and sanitation systems, deliver our mail, help protect the environment, respond to emergencies of all natures, educate our children, provide health care, and a multitude of other vital services. And whereas communities large and small depend on those who serve as elected officials and administrative personnel to accomplish the work of the people. And whereas government is only as good as men and women who work for the government. Whereas we will soon be recognized the City and Borough Museum's good gentlewoman, Jane Lindsay, for her service. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, we will also be pointing out in the audience two shy gentlemen, Kirk Douglas and Roger Healy, who mistakenly thought that they could sneak out of their last assembly meeting without being acknowledged. Whereas if government is only good as the men and women who work for the government, then the city and borough of Juneau is at its finest because of the extraordinary public service of Kirk Duncan, Roger Healy, and Jane Lindsay. We acknowledge and thank you. Now, therefore, I, Kendall D. Couch, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim the week of May 6th through May 12th, 2018, as Public Service Recognition Week. And if we could have Mr. Barr from the library come forward to recognize Jane Lindsay.
I'll do my best. So, I got that through. So, you know, Jane Lindsay has been the director of the Juneau Douglas City Museum for 18 years. And one thing that is normal and natural to do when you've worked with someone, when you've worked with a colleague, a peer, a coworker for a lengthy period of time, is you want to celebrate them and appreciate them. So that's part of what we're doing here tonight. All right, I'm going to give this back to you. And you know, one of the things that you do, one of the things that we do in our workplaces, in addition to awesome things like this, is we pass around cards and write down our well wishes and our thoughts and appreciations for that person and for Jane. And so we did that. We passed around a card, and we got that card back and quickly realized that we needed to send around another card because one was not enough. And so we got that second card back, and then a third card back, and a fourth card back. And by the time we had passed around five cards, we have satisfied the demand. So, Jane, I want to give these to you. I think they signify the quantity and the quality of the relationships that you've had here at the city and at the museum. And I just want to say one other thing. When I was thinking about and I was asking myself the question, you know, what do I want to share? About Jane and about her 18 years of experience that would be meaningful for you all. The thing that came to mind was that Jane has always in her work had a relentless and dedicated and disciplined approach to, in whatever the work that she's been doing, and tying it to the mission of the museum. So whether she and her staff were providing educational programs for youth, walking tours for adults, managing contracts for the Last Chance Mining Museum, caring for our artifacts and historical objects, whatever it was. She always made a point, either in her words or in her actions or implications, in tying that specific task, everyday work, back to the mission of the museum, which in short is to foster an awareness of the cultural heritage of our shared values, of our community memory, so that we as a community can draw perspective from those things to inspire our own learning, to inspire learning in our community, to ultimately find a purpose for the future. And, you know, regardless of the work that we do, whether we're the museum director or in any job that we do, when we've been someplace for a long time, one of the things that I think we all want for ourselves and for our colleagues is to know that we have grown something, that we've, when we're leaving a place, that we've left it in a better place than when we found it. And it's through that constant, dedicated, mission-focused work that you've done over the past 18 years that you've accomplished that. And it's for that that I want to express what I'm sure is our shared appreciation and thanks. So, thank you, Jane.
Thank you. lives.
Change it. Do you want to say anything?
I think I should just. He did very well.
Yes, he did. And congratulations, Mr. Duncan, for joining us. All right. Brings us to approval of the minutes. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we approve April 4, 2018 Special Assembly Meeting Minutes and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the minutes are approved.
I move that we approve April 11, 2018 Special Assembly Meeting and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the minutes are approved. Brings us to manager's request for agenda changes. Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, I have one request, and that would be at the tail end of the meeting under executive session that we amend that to litigation update, not just Gaston Apartments and CLIA, but all of our litigation.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Thank you.
Public participation on non-agenda items. We have three people signed up for this portion of the agenda. And when you come up, if you'll give your name and address for the record, and there's usually approximately about a two-minute limit on that, so we'll set the timer for 2 minutes. Mr. Gotkin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Jerry Gotkin, 4330 Colton Place, Juneau, Alaska. I come tonight to say good things because sometimes maybe you don't get to hear good things, but I should have come maybe a month earlier when we had snow on the ground, but I didn't make that meeting. But I came to say thanks, and there's three people in the city that you have employed that made snow dumping possible down at the Juneau Rock Dump this snow season. Michelle Ellers, David Borg, and Matthew Criswell. They worked behind the scenes to, through a Public Works Committee meeting, to come up with a place that we could dump snow. And I just wanted to say that that site worked out well. I don't think it affected any of the residents of town with backup alarms and beep, beep, beeps. It's far enough away and removed that I don't even think it bothered Douglas residents, nor did they even know we were across there. So the site worked out well, and I just wanted to say thanks and hope we can continue this relationship of dumping snow there in the future. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Mr. Rice?
Dylan Rice, 8760 Trinity Drive, Juneau, Alaska. So I am currently enrolled in the 01 auto class at JDHS, and news had struck us last week that the program might be getting cut, and that deeply concerned me. I'm going into a career that required me to have some sort of automotive background going into college, and I know a lot of the kids in the class want to do something auto-related or machinery-related. Multiple kids in the past have gone to the operators union or be mechanics here in town, or they've gone to do other things out of state. And I just really think it's a really good program, and I don't think it should be cut just because we can't afford it in our school district's budget. So I'm here to ask if you, you know, I'd really appreciate it if you guys can sign the lease or whatever, do whatever you can do to keep that program intact. Squires has been through, he's the director of the course or the program, and he's been through so much just as a teacher, from being moved by countless principals all around. He originally started out in the shop, and just he's just had a rough go about it, and I think taking the auto program from him would just be kind of like a kick in the face. He's been there for over 25 years. So I'd really appreciate whatever you guys can do.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
No problem.
Mr. Stevenson?
Brian Stevenson, 2512 Tesla Street, Juneau, Alaska. And I came tonight to support the JHS Autos program. I've been enrolled. I've done the automotive class for 2 years now, and I think it's had a positive impact on all the students that have taken it. Even if they don't choose to pursue a career in the automotive field, but I feel like it has helped a lot of students find their career and choose to go down that path and go to college, because I know I want to be a part of that career because of that program. And I feel like it's all because of the teacher. He, Mr. Squires, Steve, he's a great teacher. He always is glad to see everybody. He comes at the day with comedic and he's always willing to help you with whatever project you have. And it really helps to be maybe one day be in the classroom and learning from the book, but then the next day being able to apply that learning in the lab on real cars, on the actual parts that you were learning about. And I think it's a great program, and I don't think that it should be cut.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hold on. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. There's another opportunity closer to the end of the agenda for public participation. The other people that were signed up are all signed up on topics that we will be dealing with as we're going through. That brings us to the consent agenda. Is there any public request for consent agenda changes other than ordinance for introduction? Is there any assembly request for consent agenda changes? Assembly action. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda and ask unanimous consent.
Without objection, the motion is carried. That brings us to public hearings. Ordinance 2017-06 AM, Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $112,500 as funding for conducting deferred maintenance and repairs at the Taku Harbor Float Facility, funding provided by the State of Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a federal pass-through.
Mr. Manager.
CBJ Docks and Harbors requests approval of an appropriation ordinance that would accept grant funds from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for conducting deferred maintenance and repairs of the Taku Harbor Float Facility. The request is to approve a matching grant from Fish and Game for a $150,000 project, of which Fish and Game would provide 75% of the funds in the amount of $112,500, and Docks and Harbors would provide 25% of the funds in the amount of $37,500, which is currently in an existing CIP for this work. The funds would repair and redrive pilings that have withdrawn from the seafloor, repair deteriorated steel hinges connecting the floating approach floats, and replace some decking and rub rails. Dockson Harbor Board reviewed this ordinance at its meeting on March 29th, 2018. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the assembly. Mr. Edwardson.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt ordinance 2017-06AM, and I recommend unanimous consent.
Mr. Jones.
I'll object for a question, probably to the manager. Under bid award item B on the consent agenda, we just approved a contract at Taku Harbor Repairs for $115,993. Here we have an ordinance accepting a grant of $112,500, which is supposed to be 75% of the project. Are we going to end up sending some of this grant money back since it's a 75-25 if we are only awarding a grant of a bid of $115,000?
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, so if we want more detail, we can bring Mr. Yucatel up, but the bid award is just for the construction costs of the bid and alternate. There would be additional costs for engineering, project management, unforeseen conditions, and permitting as well. So I would imagine the goal is to do as much as we can with the grant funds and not remitting any leftover back. But we could get Mr. Yucatel if more information is necessary.
Yeah, I mean, it says that this grant is for 75% of the project. So I was just wondering what the project costs were if they're not this.
Yeah. Ms. Jones, also, like staff time can be, well, have staff time that's that can be used on this grant as well as construction administration for the project. So we'll use pretty much all the grant money that is provided by Fish and Game.
Okay. I remove my objection.
The motion has been moved and unanimous consent has been asked. Is there any objection? Ordinance 2017-06-AM is approved. Ordinance 2017-06-AP. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $75,000 as funding for leasing the Juno Subport parking lot, funding provided by the Downtown Parking Fund Balance.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance is a companion to Ordinance 2018-25, which would authorize the city manager to execute a use permit to the state for parking. This ordinance would appropriate $75,000 from the parking fund to lease additional parking spaces at the subport. Between government employers, there is a shortage of parking spaces to meet demand. State recently moved more employees into their downtown offices. Leasing additional spaces will allow CBJ to work with interested parties to determine how best to allocate and fund limited parking spaces to meet expanded need. I gave you a verbal report on downtown parking issues at the Committee of the Whole on March 19th. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2017-06-AP and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the motion has carried. Ordinance 2018-25. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing the manager to execute a use permit for approximately 1 acre of lot C2A, Juno Subport Subdivision, located at 300 Egan Drive to the state of Alaska.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance is a companion to Ordinance 2017-06-8P, which would appropriate funds to the manager to lease lot C2A of the Juno subport from Develop Juno Now, LLC. This ordinance would authorize the manager to grant a use permit to the state to use property leased by the CBJ from Develop Juno Now, LLC for parking. state has an immediate need for parking in order to alleviate new demands caused by the state relocating a number of employees from the Mendenhall Valley to downtown Juneau. The initial permit term would be 6 months, renewable thereafter on a month-to-month basis, consistent with CBJ's lease of the property. Under CBJ code, use permits normally require Planning Commission review. However, considering the state's immediate parking needs, the fact that lot C2A is privately owned, and that CDD determined the parking lot use does not require a conditional use permit, Planning Commission review is not necessary. I gave you a verbal report on downtown parking issues at the Committee of the Whole on March 19th. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Ms. Weldon?
I move that we adopt Ordinance 2018-25 and ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Ordinance 2018-01. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the Airport Operations Code relating to parking, standing, and stopping for the act of loading and unloading of passengers and providing for a penalty.
Mr. Manager.
The Airport Operations Committee determined that vehicles parking and waiting at the curb for passengers to load and unload presents both a public safety problem as well as a security compliance issue. The committee directed staff to consider an amendment to the Airport Code to address the issue. At its meeting on October 10, 2017, the Airport Board considered staff's recommendation to amend the Airport Parking Code to prohibit the standing or parking of vehicles unless actively engaged in the loading and unloading of passengers, and the proposed $100 fine, and approved moving the issue forward to the Assembly. The relevant minutes from the October 10, 2017 meeting have been included in the agenda packet. At the Assembly's request, the Airport Board has revisited this issue and, from a parking management and enforcement perspective, feels that $100 is the appropriate level of fine. I've heard from the public the concern that a $100 fine conveys an unwelcoming message at the primary gateway to Juneau. In balancing these needs, I recommend you reduce the proposed fee by motion to $50 and request that the airport report back in 1 year on the results. I recommend you adopt this ordinance with an adjusted fine of $50.
Mr. Epstein.
David Epstein, 10705 Horizon Drive. Mayor Kelsch and members of the Assembly, I am David Epstein, Juneau International Airport Board Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment on Ordinance 2018-01. I do so on behalf of the Airport Board, several members of which are here this evening. In the packet for tonight's meeting is a recommendation for you to approve the ordinance and limit the fine to $50. This takes into account feedback the city manager has received that the proposed $100 fine would convey an unwelcoming message at the primary gateway to Juneau. The sad reality is that a patina of unwelcoming messages has flourished on the airport's front drive for years, manifesting itself when drivers stop and wait minutes for an arriving passenger or park and leave their vehicle to check bags. The unwelcoming message is keenly felt during peak times when actions of a few can cause airport traffic to back up, sometimes well beyond the North Terminal. Should noncompliance persist, the airport faces injurious outcomes such as reinstatement of the 300-foot clear zone in front of the terminal and, conceivably, a finding of noncompliance with FAA grant assurances that would imperil future airport funding. The board and I are resolved to do all that we can to prevent these things from happening. The meeting packet aptly points out that the board's proposal addresses not only security, but also public safety concerns. Imagine how you would feel if a loved one was having a medical emergency in the terminal during the evening rush and first responders were stuck in front drive congestion caused by drivers who refused to actively load and unload. Seconds can mean the difference between a positive outcome and a tragic outcome. The latter would be more than unwelcoming. The terms unnecessary, inconsiderate, and inexcusable come immediately to mind. We can and must do better. The proposal was arrived at neither arbitrarily nor capriciously, and I want to be clear. The board is not advancing it as a punitive measure, but rather an effective deterrent. The board does not believe that $50 will be an effective deterrent, especially when compared with what other airports have chosen to do. The $100 fine will be one tool in the airport's toolbox to reduce congestion and improve front curb compliance. I don't expect it will completely resolve the issue, but believe it will result in an improvement. As far as I am concerned, the board has taken thoughtful and measured action to protect a vital community asset and its users. I hope that my comments will help the Assembly understand the reasoning behind our proposal and support it. Again, thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Epstein. Any questions? Mr. Edmondson, then Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Epstein, you, in your description, you talked about how your recommendation for $100 fines was neither arbitrary nor capricious. Could you explain the approach that you took to settle on $100 as opposed to any other amount?
Certainly. Through the chair, last summer, this all began last summer with essentially an explosion on social media, and people were complaining about enforcement actions by the airport. We assigned the task to our operations committee to come up with recommendations. We asked our airport manager to poll other airports and see how they are handling the same issue. We found that in some cases, other airports were charging much more than $100, and some airports were dispensing with writing tickets altogether and simply towing vehicles off the premises. In consideration of all the facts, the board wanted to come up with, if we were going to go to the trouble of suggesting an increase in the fine, we wanted it to be substantive and a deterrent. And the committee, the operations committee, zeroed in on the $100 figure. They thought that was fair. It was brought to the October board meeting last year, and the board approved it unanimously and reaffirmed it again at this month's board meeting.
It's probably a different question, but it would be for the city manager.
Okay, let me get Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones?
I support the $100. I think that's appropriate. What my fear is, and my question will be, currently most of the enforcement that you do is during the day when airport employees are on duty. Come tourist time, the biggest crunches are going to be at 5 to 7 in the morning, 9:30 at night. And if you don't have enforcement out there, this fine means nothing. And so I'm curious about if your only enforcement is between, say, 7:30 in the morning and 5, when most of the violations will take places outside that, those people that get fined during the middle of the day will be treated differently than those at night because your enforcement's different. So is the airport doing anything different for the enforcement, using employees late at night or earlier in the morning, doing anything like that at all?
We have considered using airport staff after hours, but we have not come up with a decision at this time.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Keel and then Ms. Weldon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Epstein, does the airport have any sense of how many of the folks causing problems out there are repeat offenders, folks who've previously been ticketed?
Through the chair, I don't think so, Mr. Keel.
Okay. Then just two other follow-up questions. Can you tell us how much the airport is, how many tickets the airport is writing on a daily or weekly basis for stopping in that front area now?
Through the chair, I'd have to ask our airport manager to get that information to you.
And then the last question on this topic would be, I understand if I read the minutes, airport board minutes correctly, those dollars do come back to the airport. Are they accounted for separately? Are you using those for overtime for an enforcement person or anything along those lines?
Mr. Keel, through the chair, I'd have to find out.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Walton.
So my question is sort of along the lines of Mr. Jones, because having traveled a lot lately, I can attest to what he sees. During the day, you have staff moving people around, but at night, they sit in camp. So my question is, who is enforcing and who is writing the tickets?
Three of the airport staff were commissioned by former city manager Kim Kiefer to write tickets. And I believe airport police or JPD officers that are out there when they have the opportunity also write applications.
Mr. Edwardson, you have a question to the manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
So anyone else have a question for Mr. Epstein? Thank you, Mr. Epstein. And thank you for your service out there. Mr. Edwardson to the manager.
Mr. Watt, we heard Mr. Epstein describe the process they went through to get to $100. What process did the staff go through to settle on 50 as opposed to, say, 75 or 25? I know I don't want to be fined $100 either, but if I was looking at a $100 fine, it's probably less likely that I'd camp out in front of the airport.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, I would say very unscientifically it's a doubling of the 25, and the idea would be that it sends a message of the seriousness of the issue. I have not met anybody that likes to pay a $25 parking ticket for that matter, and I was trying to suggest to the Assembly that there might be an incremental approach. So no magic on the $50.
Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, you know, in my opinion, this is a matter of public outreach, and that I posted on my Facebook page just some commentary about the parking rules and regulations, and the folks that decided to comment brought up some pretty valid reasons for their misunderstanding of our parking at the airport. And what I was hearing is that when they go to other airports, that they don't have the same level of enforcement that we have here. And I just happened to be, as these comments were coming through, traveling. And I was in Anchorage, for instance, and I just stood out on the curb while I was waiting for my ride. And the commenters had very valid questions. I noticed that in Anchorage, there was one guy that was nonchalantly out walking around, and then he just headed back into the airport, and there were people parked all over the place. And so it seems to me that our citizens are having trouble understanding and comprehending why we have such stringent rules, and they just don't seem to understand. And I think that a video or something along those lines that's maybe shared by the city and borough staff would really go a long way in helping our community to understand why we need to keep these cars moving, because I feel that, you know, we just aren't getting through to the public as to why these cars need to keep moving. Today, during my two runs to the airport, I noticed that most of the drivers there at noon were using the cell phone lot. Same thing this morning at 9 for the pickup. So it seems like, you know, we have a part of the community that is really trying to do their part. But it seems like, as Mr. Jones alluded to earlier, that at night seems to be the issue where people are camping. And I would like to see us do more outreach on the matter to the community to help them to understand.
Okay. We have
at least one more person sign up for testimony, and I'd like to get them in before we come back again. Mr. Harris?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Assembly. My name is... This thing has a problem. My name is Dennis Harris. I live at 544 West 12th Street, and I am a member of the Juneau Airport Board, and I am on the Operations Committee. We held a meeting in July after a lot of haranguing on social media and invited the public to come. No one showed up, except for these two assembly members and airport staff and board members. And we talked at the issue at length then. But, yes, Mr. Gregory is correct. There's a problem with knowledge and attitude, both. There are some people in this town that feel that rules don't apply to them. And even though there has been signs at the airport for years saying you can't park here, no stopping or standing, active loading and unloading only, people ignore it constantly. Some people just think it doesn't apply to them. And so we get traffic blockages, which could be a real problem with emergencies. We could lose some of our federal assurances, and we don't want to risk the airport's operations, which depend heavily on federal funding. We don't want to move the barrier, and I believe that sometimes you need to shock people a little. People tear up $25 tickets. It happens all the time. I presume they eventually pay them, because I assume the city eventually finds their car and boots it when they get enough of them or something. But the point is that I believe it takes a shock like this to get people to pay attention. No matter how much signage we put out there, people do not pay attention. And I think you'll find it very interesting. Most of you know that Mr. Godkin and I don't agree very much on things. But we certainly agree on this. And I was the one that made the motion to send it back to you with the $100 fine intact. I really feel like you're trying to second-guess us. You know, we're an empowered board. Very rarely do we actually vote on something that isn't pro forma. We, just like you, we spend a lot of time rubber stamping appropriations things or reviewing grant applications, that kind of stuff. But we very rarely have a chance to actually take a stand on something. And in this case, the entire airport board was unanimous. We feel that it's really important that we do this. And as far as being a welcoming city, the people coming in aren't going to notice this, except for the fact that they may not be able to have their friend come drive up and pick them up because traffic is so clogged up. So as far as a welcoming capital city, that's a bogus argument. The people that are going to get fined are local people who just plain don't pay attention to the law and need to start paying attention. I suspect we'll write a dozen tickets, and after that, people will stop behaving like this, especially if we have some money from tickets to pay a little overtime to get people out there early in the morning and late at night when it's really a problem. But the biggest problem is that the police officer that's on duty out there at the airport has to be at the gate when the plane lands, which, of course, is when everybody wants to come in. And I spent 10 years in the taxi zone out there watching this happen and getting very frustrated occasionally when I was trying to get through there to drop somebody off at the curb. So I urge you to just please back your airport board. Thank you.
Questions? Mr. Gregory, Mr. Edmondson, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a question for staff, and it's in regards to the tickets. So when a citation is issued, do the citizens have a time frame to pay that ticket? If it goes unpaid, what happens?
this is handled like a civil fine, so there is a time frame within which they can pay the ticket, they can appeal the ticket, which is heard by Ms. Cosgrove. The tickets are processed downstairs through the cash office. If they don't pay the ticket, they are defaulted upon, and that goes through the collections office.
And then the process from there?
The process from the collection?
Yes.
There can be, ideally under the code, there are various things that can happen when people don't pay tickets. Everything from garnishment of a PFD, depending on how many unpaid tickets they have, to a collection action through court. We have a number of unpaid tickets that have not been collected upon, but the collections office is in the process of going through those and getting back up to speed.
All right. I have Edwardson, Keel, and Jones, but before that, are there any questions for Mr. Harris? Okay. Mr. Harris, could you come back up for just a second, please?
I did have a question for Mr. Harris or for someone from the airport committee that worked on this. Whoever the airport wants to send up, but I thought Mr. Harris was appropriate since he had just testified about the board's unanimity on this. And I guess the question...
Well, let's have somebody up here before. Either Mr. Harris or Mr.
Epstein. Mr. Epstein speaks for the board.
Thank you, Mr. Epstein. I appreciate you coming back up for a question prompted by another board member's testimony. Downside of having a gavel, huh? So the question was about how the board considered the proportionality with the remainder of, with the rest of the parking fines in CBJ. So relative to parking on a red curb, relative to blocking a fire lane. You think the $100 is in the right proportion of those?
Through the chair, Mr. Keel, I think we focused more on what other airports were doing, not so much how it related to the parking fine structure here in the city.
Okay. I guess that's part of my concern is that, in terms of airport operations, I very much appreciate the work the board does and the expertise the board brings. We do have the rest of the city enterprise to consider and proportionality among all of our fines for other parking violations.
Okay. Mr. Edwardson, we don't need Mr. Epstein.
I don't think so. I don't know who this question is for, though. So it could be for anybody. So it could be him.
Okay.
and it is for anybody, even my colleagues on the assembly here. Later on tonight, we're going to be hearing a recommendation to make stiffer penalties on another ordinance. So why are the penalties okay to be stiffer on a different behavior than on the parking? And I'm talking specifically about the adding 25 hours of community work service and lowering the cap. How is it different between one or the other?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Thank you. The fines are the ordinance that you'll be dealing with later is a criminal violation. This is not a criminal violation. This is a civil fine. That's the first answer. The second answer is the increase that we're doing is required by state law. This is not, and I think one of the goals that we try to keep in mind when we're proposing other traffic fines is that idea of proportionality. I don't know if the airport considered that. I'm not speaking to that at all, but that's the ordinance that you're going to hear later is a criminal violation. It's a different class entirely of what you're hearing now.
Follow-up? You've explained that it's different, but not how it's different. I mean, yeah, of course, I mean, it says right in there criminal and misdemeanor, but the behaviors are the same. People are either ignoring or breaking the law. So how is it different?
I guess, Mr. Mayor, if I may, I'll just answer that by the state law and our code treats different classifications of bad behavior in different ways and with different levels of severity. So a traffic ticket is treated much differently than a DUI or a DV assault. One can expose you to much higher and more severe penalties. That is the answer.
Mr. Epstein, did you wait?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to add a little context here, the fine we're proposing at the airport differs from, say, a normal parking fine because of the consequences attached to failure to actively load or unload. As I mentioned in my testimony, the 300-foot clear area in front of the terminal that was in effect shortly after 9/11 could conceivably be re-implemented. So there's more on the line. That's one patch in the crazy quilt of why we came up with $100.
Sure. And my question was the concept that stiffer penalties creates the behavior you want, regardless of whether it's a traffic ticket or a felony. So, thank you.
Mr. Jones, and then Mr. Gregory.
My only comment, Mr. Mayor, was that we're still in public hearing. We don't have a motion, and it's an awful lot of discussion.
We do.
That we should be either asking questions or waiting for a motion.
And we're not through with public hearing. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So how does the airport staff determine when somebody is actively loading and unloading? And the reason why I bring that up is that, you know, I had several trips to the airport today, starting this morning, and traffic seemed to be flowing quite smoothly. And at my house, it's turned into a bit of a joke that nobody should drive my car and dare park in front of the airport because somebody in a yellow vest is going to come over and get you, and they're not going to do that in my car. So as I was dropping somebody off at the airport today, we had pulled up, and we weren't there for maybe more than 30 to 45 seconds, saying our goodbyes when, you know, we see somebody moving over. So at what point is it going to get to the level where you're going to get a ticket? How far into that standing, waiting, parking do you need to be to get a ticket?
Through the chair, that's requires a subjective answer. I give you a real-world example. When my wife comes back from a trip, I sit in the cell phone lot with my cell phone, and she calls me when she's got her bags and is ready to be picked up, and she proceeds out the front door, and I exit the cell phone lot, and we look for one another. She gets in the car, and off we drive. In reverse situation, when she goes on her trip, I take her out there. We stop on the front curb. Both get out. I get her bags, put them on the curb, give her a kiss goodbye. She's off and I'm off. So, you know, no one's going to be sitting out there with a chronometer, and there's no set time frame, but you know it when you see it. And if behaviors vary too much from what I've just described, then we kind of get into that area where it's not active anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Epstein. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on this? I will bring it back to the Assembly, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the Assembly approve Ordinance 2018-01 and would ask unanimous consent.
Object.
I object.
All right. Mr. Jones, do you wish to speak to your motion?
No, I'll let the objectors speak.
Ms. Becker and then Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to amend the motion to say the city manager recommends you, well, I can't say the city manager too. I recommend or ask the assembly to recommend that the ordinance have an adjusted fine of $100.
No, 100 is what's in there now.
Hmm?
100 is what's in there now. You said 100.
Mm-hmm. I would like that 50 to turn to 100.
Do we have a motion that has 50 or 100 in it?
The ordinance has $100 in it.
Okay. If the ordinance has $100, then it can be adjusted back to 50 or 75 or whatever. So you're supporting the motion of the ordinance with a $100 fine.
Yes.
Which is where we are right now. All right, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I had not misunderstood Ms. Becker's support for $100. I can't support $100. I think if the airport board sees people and the airport staff sees people tearing up $25 tickets, then the fine needs to go up. But what gets compliance better than anything is swift, certain consequences. As long as they're high enough to make an impact. I can tell you that the people in the last 2 weeks who've complained to me were decidedly impacted by the $25 tickets and were very unhappy. And they described what had happened, and I let them know they needed to pay their tickets. But if in fact people are tearing up tickets, then they should go up. But I think $100 is out of proportion to the rest of what we do at CBJ. So as I was scrolling through our various fines, and I'll apologize to the city attorney if I read this wrong, but I think if you park on the red curb, which is reserved for the fire trucks, that's $55 the first time you do it. And I think blocking a fire access road, not sure how that's different from a red curb, but blocking a fire access road is $50 the first time you do it. And that, too, is a significant safety element. So I move that we amend this fine to set the fine for standing, stopping, parking in an active loading zone at $55.
I'll object.
Discussion? Mr. Keel, did you want to talk about your amendment anymore?
I think I just did.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
Thank you. I don't disagree with some of the comments that Mr. Keel made. I would like to see enforcement earlier in the morning, late at night. And I think with some active enforcement, the issuance of any fine would be limited. I agree with one of the statements that Mr. Gregory made about Anchorage, in and out of that airport quite a bit. And they don't seem to be as active with the police out there as they are in Fairbanks, and certainly not Seattle. I know when I show up in Albuquerque, they chased my kid off because he opened up the back waiting for me, and I was slow getting through the two lanes to get out there. And the police came up and closed the back of his car and told him to move on because he wasn't actively loading. I wasn't putting a suitcase in there. I think that we get a little spoiled in Juneau, and I don't see any reason to lower the fine. I think $100. And if the airport and maybe the police department would start doing more enforcement at night, I don't think they would issue hardly any fines because people would move on. But I've been out there where that's an active road that has no parking, that is four lanes, and all four lanes have had cars stopped waiting to load. People just stop, and nobody moves. So $100 fine, I think, is appropriate. So I'm not going to support the amendment.
That's well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to speak against the amendment and consequently for the first motion because, as the airport board and Mr. Epstein has said, there's different consequences for this parking infraction rather than parking in the red zone. We could get ourselves in trouble for noncompliance with the FAA, and certainly none of us want to have to walk 300 feet or risk losing any grants, since that's what funds the airport so heavily. So I will be voting against the amendment.
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, am going to vote against the amendment. I would hate to see our airport, which, you know, we have been working on some projects out there that really need some FAA funding. And knowing how grants work, we don't want anything that is going to adversely impact the grants at our airport. Moving forward with this, though, one thing that I am serious about is that we need to do some education, that we are a hub for many rural communities in Southeast Alaska, and we have many people that rent cars and come here. Just based on my own personal experience, I went down to Cake on Friday, and when I go down to the village, I don't go down empty-handed. I go down with just about as much stuff that will fit in my car. And that means that I need to unload that stuff, and I need to get it into the airport. I managed to do so without getting a ticket. But making sure that our neighbors are also aware of the rules in the city. You get out to rural Southeast Alaska, it's a little different. So I'd really like to see some education and outreach in the form of a video. I found that videos seem to work best. I, you know, support our airport staff and the airport board for the work that they do, and I've seen what they have to deal with out there on occasion, and sometimes it's not so nice. And for those reasons, I am voting against the amendment to switch this from a $100 fine to a $50 fine, but I'd really like to see some education.
Okay, further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll. And the amendment is to, for ordinance 2018-01, the amount be $55.
Okay. Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Ms. Weldon?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Mr. Edwardson?
No.
Mr. Gregory?
No.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion failed.
No. Back to the main motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Yes, I maintain my objection.
All right. Do you wish to speak to it, or?
Only to speak a little further. I think we've heard the manager talk about our perception is whether we're a welcoming capital city or not. And we've heard a number of assembly members talk about perceptions and how we need to educate the public and how we need to do our enforcement. I can tell you that the ways in which we differ from other cities in Alaska make a big impression on people who travel to the capital city and travel as a regional hub, especially the two I mentioned earlier. But it is that swift, sure enforcement that makes the biggest difference on behavior. Since we don't know how many people are actually stopping in the loading zone and hanging out more than one time, more than one ticket, we really don't have any way to know whether the enforcement we're doing now is effective or not. Certainly, the comments of a number of assembly members here tonight suggest that we don't think it is. If we're not doing it at the right times and we're not educating the public first, just going to a shock and awe level fine that is more than the city and borough of Juneau would fine you to sleep in your car along a public way, more than the city and borough of Juneau would fine you to have your dog menace another human being a second time, it's out of whack, and it doesn't actually make sense. So some proportional increase would have made sense, but this, I think, you know, the vast majority of folks who come to the Capitol come to the airport. Doesn't mean we should not ask them to follow the rules, but I think we should be appropriate in how we do it. And I've heard a number of comments tonight that suggest we don't think we're being that way. So I can't support going to a $100 fine. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to encourage my colleagues on the Assembly to vote for this ordinance with the $100 fine. And for me, it comes down to one thing, quite simply. It's our personal safety at our airport. And that's the whole reason behind the no parking rule. And it's evident that there are some people that still don't understand. It's unfortunate that we've gotten to this point. I think that the airport has been very lenient with the parking and the issues that have been happening out there on the curb, and that it's time to ratchet it up and make sure that people understand what the rules are at the airport.
Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to support this, and one of the main reasons is it appears to me that the airport board has done its work. I don't think that they just went in a room and decided we're gonna increase the fine fourfold. They spoke to other airports. They researched. They came up with something that they thought would be a suitable deterrent for Juneau. So I'll support the airport board.
Any other comments? Ordinance 2018-01, where the fine will be $100. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. That brings us to Ordinance 2018-13B. You guys wish to take a break? Can we come back here at 8:15, please?
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917 with personal and commercial insurance, including bonds, marine, auto, and more. 789-5900.
Underwriting support comes from Island Air Express, providing IFR commuter service between Kowak and Ketchikan, and beginning May 1st, expanded daily service to Juneau and Petersburg. Reservations at islandairx.com.
You're listening to KTOO. Juneau, Alaska. The time is 8:07. And you're tuned to the CBJ Assembly meeting. They've gone on a brief break. Tonight, showers, low around 41 degrees, southeast wind around 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain, high near 44. Tuesday night is rain. Wednesday, rain likely, mostly cloudy, high near 45. And Thursday, a 40% chance of rain. Going on to Friday and Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, all partly cloudy.
This station is supported by Breezin, carrying a variety of sandwiches, fresh baked bread, and pastries. Chef Moorhead offers daily changing menu choices for takeout and catering for special events and parties. More information at breezin.com.
Tropical breeze, my hammock between coconut trees, and lay low down in Abaco. Smiling faces everywhere, here I come, Bahamas, there to lay low down in Abaco, down in Abaco. I wanna be a Conky Joe down in Abaco, with sand between my toes where I'm at. Nobody knows, laying low down in Abaco. To sail my ship on your crystal sea, visit Milo at Guanaki, lay low down in Abaco, I'll drop anchor in New Plymouth town. Stop at the Blue Bee, I'll buy a round and lay low. Down at Abaco. Down in Abaco. I wanna be a Conky Joe down in Abaco. With sand between my toes where I'm at. Nobody knows laying low. Down in Abaco. Golden sunshine, got a clear mind, and you're by my side. Miles of beaches, no way to reach it, I can run for miles. Down in Abaco, I wanna be a Conky Joe down in Abaco. With sand between my toes where I'm at. Nobody knows laying low. Down in Abaco. I recall tequila in Mexico, potato moonshine from Idaho, Oktoberfest out in Germany. Hey, but I can't remember 2 weeks last September when I was on Guanaquil. I was at Nippin. They say I was passed out cold at Nippin. I was dancing naked, so I was sold at Nippin. Round the corner by the old fig tree, I was intoxicated, inebriated, three notches past tipsy. I recall. Thank you.
are back in session. And we have ordinance 2018-13B. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance creating local improvement district number 200 for a riverbank stabilization project along the Mendenhall River between 9399 River Court Way and 3463 Neon Way, and appropriating the sum of $5,095,000.
Mr. Manager.
26 properties along the Mendenhall River between River Court Way and the north end of Meander Way are threatened by severe riverbank erosion. Many of the property owners asked the CBJ to assist with securing funding for a riverbank stabilization project through the National Resources Conservation Service Emergency Watershed Protection Program. NRCS would fund the design, inspection, and construction administration plus 75% of the estimated construction costs. Total cost of the project, including construction costs, is estimated to be $11,425,000. This ordinance would create a local improvement district, LID 200, to provide the local sponsorship as required by NRCS. CBJ estimates its contribution to the project will be $3,015,000, which includes the assessment to be paid by the CBJ as a property owner within the LID, but does not include the costs associated with maintaining the riverbank protection structure for a period of 10 years, as would be required. The property owner's combined contribution through the LID would be fixed at $2,080,000 or $80,000 per property. The allocation of the property owner's assessment would be borne equally by all of the affected properties. Because the CBJ will be absorbing a large portion of the costs, and as the property owner's contribution is capped at a value that is lower than could properly be assessed against the properties otherwise, equal apportionment is warranted. At its Committee of the Whole meeting on November 20, 2017, the Assembly directed staff to proceed with the proposed LID ordinance and recommended fixing the property owner assessments at $80,000 per lot. CBJ 1510-040B requires that the notice of public hearing be mailed to the property owners at least 30 days prior to the hearing. CBJ mailed notices to the property owners on March 1, 2018. Version B of the ordinance corrects the overall project costs and makes other changes required by that amendment, such as the amount to be paid by the CBJ. For the sake of the owners that need or desire bank protection, I would like to recommend favorably on this ordinance. However, I cannot make a positive recommendation for a variety of reasons, which include the following. One, there are a substantial number of owners that have indicated they do not want or need the project. Two, a compulsory assessment of $80,000 is more than 10 times larger than our other CBJ LIDs that have been used for paving or wastewater system improvements. Forcing an unwilling owner to pay this much money, however well-financed, would be a life-changing financial event. Three, the costs are high enough that approval of this ordinance makes litigation likely. Four, CBJ almost certainly would be required to obtain project easements through condemnation. Property condemnation should be a tool of last resort. And five, the Mendenhall River flow and erosion pattern is dynamic and constantly changing. Whether true or not, the project is likely to be viewed as causative of upstream and downstream flow alignment change and bank alteration. I recommend you reject this ordinance.
We're now at public comment. John Tabor.
Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, my name is John Tabor. I live at 9399 River Court Way. The last house in the proposed project area. My wife and I have supported this project from before it began. When in an earlier phase of the project, a smaller number of properties were covered by it. We worked pretty hard to get ours included in the list of those covered. And the reason for that is quite simple and straightforward, and that is we're losing our riverbank at an astonishing and very, very frightening rate. At this point, we've lost, I estimate, about 12 feet of bank to the river. At one point, the bank is now within about 8 feet of our house and moving in. The properties on both sides of ours have collapsed into the river beyond that point that I'm describing for the corner of our house. And so we have compelling reasons to want to see this project or something very much like it done to protect our home. And so in addition to expressing disappointment at the manager's recommendation, I would urge the assembly to help us out in some way if this project doesn't work out, if you decide not to proceed with it, if the federal funding doesn't come through, if for whatever reason it's not possible to proceed with it. We still have to do something to protect our property. And so there's permitting and there's all of the process of getting things done, put together so that you can do a project that will defend your house, your property from the river. And so we would urge that if all else fails, that the city and borough assist us in that process, find some way to help us through the process of getting what would be needed in order to proceed with our own project. So that's it. Please vote yes, notwithstanding the recommendation. But if you can't for some reason, then please find some other way to help us get the permissions, permits, and whatnot that we need in order to be able to go forward with something on our own.
Thank you, Mr. Tabor. Could you hold on just a second? Are there any questions? Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Tabor, I was reviewing the plat for your neighborhood as I was trying to understand this situation, and I'm sure many others up here don't want to see anybody's home lost due to erosion. Were you aware that on your plat there is a plat note that talks about where your home is located, and that upon recording of your deed for your home, that these riverfront lots, that the purchaser implies that a satisfactory review of this plat has been made, which says that your lot is subject to river accretion and or river erosion. Were you aware of that when you bought your home?
No, I was not.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Christine Shaw.
I'm Christine Shaw at 3315 Mandaway, and Mr. Mayor and Assembly Members, thank you for letting me briefly just say my position. I brought some photos, if it's okay. I have copies, and you can just take one and pass it down while I'm talking. A picture is worth 1,000 words, and it would make things go faster, so I'll just hand that down. I have just enough for them. That's okay. I know I've written in my position, and I strongly opposed it. And I know, and I won't read what I've already sent in, but I would like to highlight just a few things to kind of reiterate my position on that. So, first off, as you know, with LIDs, the key cornerstone of why you want to form a LID is that that local improvement will add an assessable monetary value to your property. And they're typically for sidewalks, lights, curbs. This is a very unusual way of using a LID. And because of the, in this case, the magnitude, I really want to emphasize the magnitude of the cost, is really completely disproportionate to the overall value of the land, the properties. It will not bring, in my case, if you when you look at our property, it will not bring an assessable increase in value to our land. We don't have anything to gain from that. It's just the cost is simply not justifiable. In addition, the initial cost, you know, of the assessment is $80,000, but when you take in and you factor in the interest, it really comes closer to $114,000. And I just kind of want you to think about that, $114,000, okay? We're a retired family. I know there's young families, or it's a staggering cost, and it has, you know, here's a face. It's a real person, and it has a staggering impact on us. And I wanted to be here so you could see it's real families are involved. I brought my daughter to this so you could see that it just would have a tremendous financial burden on us without really realizing any value to it. Secondly, the NRCS, you know, there was an initial bid for this, you know, to say, hey, what kind of design? And of course, they're going to say, ours is the best. Oh, I'm sorry. You want them to say that it's
okay,
the best.
Shaw,
oh, yes.
Do you have a written testimony, and do you have very much more to go?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's it. And I just handed out the pictures to show you that we don't have erosion. We have 43 feet in our backyard, and we all aware and signed a deed saying that we understand being living next to the river, and we are very much against it.
Okay, if you can hold for just a second. Are there questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Tracy Hedden. Hedden? All right. I'm not great with handwriting right now. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing our comments this evening. And I have already submitted something in writing, but I would like to just make a few comments.
And could you state your name and address for the record, please?
My name is Tracy Heaton, and I am at 9391 River Court Way. I am the third to the last in the downstream. I'm at the very end of River Court. And I understand that this is a huge LID, and this isn't something to be taken lightly. And none of us want this. Yeah, none of us have this extra money. But for 5 years, this has been eating at our bank. We have been losing property. And I believe that all of us are in a position where we live in homes that we may not be able to sell in the future without doing some drastic bank stabilization. So whether it's $40,000 or it's $80,000 through the NRCS program or grant, we need to come up with a big chunk of money, because a buyer, when we go to sell our home, is going to want to make sure that that bank stabilization has been done. And if you look at getting a home equity loan, that would be typically their 10-year amortizations. And right now, you're looking at 5% interest. You're looking at a payment of around $424. If we were to be able to do something through the city and we were offered something like a 15-year amortization and even paying that same interest rate, we're looking at a difference of $200 a month. So although I know nobody wants to put in and have an extra burden of $80,000 on us. But most of us are going to have a $40,000 price tag that we have to come up with. And as far as adding value to our homes, right now, this needs to be fixed before we can sell our properties. So I would encourage you, I know it is a huge LID. I know this is going to be a burden on all of us. But if it's not done as a whole, I don't believe it will ever be done. We have a neighbor on one side who will not do it. We have a neighbor downstream that's CBJ. We have on both sides of us, for us to move forward, we don't have the support. And I think it will be very difficult for all of the homeowners to get financing, for all of them to participate in this. And so you're going to get this patchwork construction done that will be additional lawsuits. It will create a neighborhood that is devalued. And I encourage you to vote yes for this.
Are there any questions, Mr. Gregory?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Heaton, thank you for your testimony tonight, and I'm sorry to hear about the erosion that's taking place near your home. When you bought your home, were you aware of the plat notes that I had referenced earlier, that your home and the property that it's built on may be subject to accretion and or erosion as a result of the river moving?
I'm not sure I was aware it was on the plat notes, but when we purchased our home, we did do some research. We talked to neighbors upstream and downstream. We had a state hydrologist, who is a friend, come and take a look at the property. We live on a straight away, and we were informed from neighbors upstream and downstream that there has not been any significant bank loss in 30 years. The hydrologist looked at it, and he said, you know, I really think you're in a safer area. It's nice and straight here. He didn't foresee any issues. We still went in knowing that we were at a risk living on a river, and we would probably need to do some bank stabilization. But we had no idea that five of the next 6 years that would be this glacial release and have multiple 100-year floods every year.
A follow-up to that question is, you know, hearing from what the city manager said and hearing what we've heard from NCRS, are you aware that the possible repair to the riverbank near your home to try to stop it from eroding could have hydrological consequences both upriver and down for your neighbors?
Yes, and whether this is done with all 26 properties or one property here and one property there, that's a huge concern. If, for example, we lost our back deck 5 years ago, and when we had work, we had different bids. Contractors come and take a look at it, and the first bid, he said it was $150,000. Another person said $100,000, but he said, to be honest, I won't even touch this because of the liability. And even if we did do work, they said we could not do the work within the scope of our lot. We would need to go upstream and downstream. And so we're not just looking at $30,000 or $40,000 for our lot. In order for our neighbor not to sue us, I mean, we haven't gone forward with any work because anything that we do individually, we are opening ourselves up to a lawsuit from our neighbors upstream and downstream.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify? Could you just state your name and address for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Joyce Gehring. I live at 3361 Meander Way. We are right in the heart of the improvement district that's being considered. We are on a straightaway. We do not have any damage to our property, nor do several of the properties on either side of us, upstream or downstream. I have written in, my husband has, and we have objected to the LID. I would like to respectfully point out something to you and hopefully bring this to more of a personal level. You guys just spent 40 minutes debating a difference of $50 for the airport issue, $50 versus $100. You have three dozen people out there that are looking at $80,000. Can you imagine someone telling you that you now are going to be charged $80,000 extra on your home? This equates to about $632 a month for the next 15 years. We don't have a riverbank destabilization problem. The people on either side of us do not either. We are looking at being forced into this by the unfortunate occasions that has happened to a few people on the river. I do feel for them. However, I feel that they are somewhat responsible. They have sat for 3 to 5 years doing nothing to help alleviate their own erosion. In one case upstream from us, I will not name any names, this individual had severe erosion. Because he has done nothing these several years, the two properties upstream from him that you are aware of had erosion. They did not sit by for 5 years. They went in this last spring, and they corrected their own riverbank. Meanwhile, the person who originally had so much damage has done nothing. The people with the most damage are sitting by waiting for this $80,000 to be assessed to all of us so that they are only paying $80,000 to correct their riverbank. They wouldn't have to pay the $150,000 they've been quoted. $80,000 to them sounds a lot better than $150,000. When we bought our property, we were well aware that we are riverbank owners. We are responsible for our own riverbank. We don't expect our neighbors to provide funds for us to provide riverbank stabilization. I would like to ask you how you would suggest that a family such as ours, who is financially responsible, come up with an extra $632 for the next 15 years. Should we stop making car payments? Should we let the banks come and get our cars? Should we withdraw our daughter from college? Should we both get extra jobs? Should we come down on our grocery bills? We are financially responsible people. We did not buy a more expensive home because we knew we couldn't afford another $600 a month. This looks to be being forced on us, and we have no other choice than to fight it the best we can. I respectfully ask that you vote no on this ordinance. Thank you.
Wait just a second. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Whichever one, Mr. Jager or Mr.
Sorry, I didn't get to sign up. I missed the sheet somehow. My name is Howard Jager at 3451 Meander Way, Juneau, Alaska. You have the letter from me in writing of what we objected to. We've worked hard. I mean, a lot of us have worked on this, and it wasn't an easy decision, but there are so many things. You know, first of all, I'm not happy with the city not involving us in the process more than we were. We went several months without any. I mean, we had a meeting in January, I think it was, where we couldn't give any. It was a COW meeting, so we couldn't give any testimony. We just sit here and listen to the verbiage back and forth. And then the next thing, and you know, we had an offer in at $40,000, and that got rejected, and came back then with an $80,000, and we never got to sit down as a group and discuss that and the back and forth on the thing. I mean, it was just, I just think there wasn't enough input to bring this thing to a conclusion. For us personally, when you start looking at the nitty gritty on the thing and talked in NRCS, as I stated in my minutes, I've talked to them. This thing could be riprapped within 10 feet of our home. And I told them up front, that's not acceptable. That's just not flat acceptable. It's a river, okay, but the river is right there when you open your door, and they want to fence the whole thing for safety. So as soon as we go out our back door, there's a tent. There's some kind of a fence. They don't even have it decided whether it's going to be a wooden fence, whether it's going to be 8 feet tall, 4 feet tall, whether it's going to, you know, they don't know. They don't know how long it's going to take them to build this thing. They don't know where they're going to access the river and how they're going to access the river. That'll be up to the contractor. So the guesstimate on price is a guesstimate. And it may be real accurate. I don't know. But a year ago, you know, it was $7,765,000. Now it's something larger than that, $11,350,000. So, you know, the biggest thing is the taking. We had to go ahead and do our repairs. I hear talk of people being litigated and sued because they did something. We did something, and now people are telling us that we may be sued for what we did because what we did may do something. Well, I wonder if the shoe fits the other foot, too, and it's what if the people that did nothing and then ours dropped, what are they saying about litigation, and where does this whole thing fit in? So I don't know that, I mean, I'm not interested in litigation at all, period, end of report. No, I think we should be able to sit down and work this out. It hasn't taken, I mean, it's taken a long time, and probably that's necessary. But like I say, we needed more input into that thing. We don't even know whether the LID vote, whether the folks that didn't vote, whether they're going to be counted as a yes, a no, or a what. We don't know. That's not a, the answer we got was it's up to the assembly, excuse me, at tonight's meeting. Well, what does that do for us trying to vote on an LID one way or the other when we don't know how it's going to vote? We, you know, we haven't gotten together. The community, excuse me.
Want to sum up?
Oh, sorry. I guess I went past that. So anyway, you've got my thoughts on this, but I do think that the, you know, the litigation effort is way out of bounds, and the taking of property from property owners, I think, is going to be an obstacle. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Weldon?
Mr. Jager, since you said you have put some riprap down, I know you're not a hydrologist, but does, at this point, does it seem to be holding?
It is. We don't see that there's a single rock that's moved, neither us nor our neighbors. And it wasn't just willy-nilly thrown in the river like some have suggested. And I think it's there. It's way better than it was before. I was there when that riprap was there. Yeah, we've owned that home since 1982. And so we've seen a lot of things go on. The water coming down the river, the jockaloops, maybe they're going to be over. I don't know.
Just a follow-up, too.
Keel.
And then would you be willing to give us, without giving us specifics, a ballpark figure of how much that cost you?
It cost us just over $30,000. That includes the permits. And that was $30,000 for me, $30,000 for my neighbor, $60,000 for 160 feet. We each have an 80-foot wide lot.
Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Jager, I just want to make sure I understand. You described one situation where those who did spend money might get sued, and a situation where those who didn't spend money might get sued. That argument seems to suggest that the city ought to do a project that takes that whole question off the table, but you're still opposing the project, even though you want to take litigation off the table. Can you help me understand that?
I'm trying to understand your question. The litigation, the reason I brought it up is because there was a couple of people before and in writing that you've heard from that said that because the people next door to them did something, that now they feel that their property is going to be washed away. I mean, these are my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just talking about my neighbors, and they're the ones that wrote it to you about the litigation, and they've never talked to me flatly face-to-face about it because we did what we think was right. I mean, if I was here tonight telling you that we didn't do anything last year and now this thing is within 3 feet or 5 feet of our house, and I talked to NRCS before we did this work, and he suggested we should have this done, that we should get this done. He knew that NRCS, the program was not going to progress fast enough for us. It comes down, that river makes a 90 and another 90, and it's bringing trees and everything else down there. Did I answer that all right?
Let me ask it a slightly different way. Do you see any way people aren't suing each other if we vote no tonight?
I would hope that people wouldn't try to sue each other for what? For living there and doing something you think is right? I mean, he probably has as good a reason for not doing what he's doing as I did for doing what I did.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Brian Gettler, 3323 the Ander Way. It was not disclosed to me on my plat or anything else when I bought the place 20 years ago. It should be 2001. I'm on a straight section of river, not experiencing any erosion that I can see. Had the bank inspected before I bought, but we're all in this tough situation here right now. I guess one thing I do urge, and we heard from Bud about the progress. This has been kind of snailing through the assembly, and I get it that everyone's busy with big issues. But there hasn't been much I've seen done on this in the last 6 or 9 months. As far as a year ago, we had 80% consensus amongst the neighbors, which means that 4 or 5 people said no. Some of those people were probably looking to flip their houses and didn't want an $80,000 bill or ambiguity with selling. And that's one of my issues, is the ambiguity of my house right now. If I wanted to leave, which I'm not planning on doing, I've got this dark cloud hanging over it. The value is probably going to decrease because of the uncertainty with erosion or what's been proposed here. What I would urge is for some due diligence with the assembly. I got a letter that said, come if you want to object, send input if you want to object. I'm happy to be able to be here at least to speak some support. But there may be other people that weren't aware of that we can come and voice our support since it was treated as an objection meeting tonight. I asked for due diligence. I sent material in this morning when I found out that I could send supporting material in. I don't believe the assemblies had adequate time to read it or a flood of other input from the neighbors, so I would urge that perhaps we, rather than run to a vote right now, we at least take the time to do diligence, given the severity of this and the impact on the neighborhood. Throwing rock on the bank, I'm a civil engineer. You can put rock on the bank, but typically you want to put a filter cloth behind it so you know the road, the fines won't come through and daylight wash into the river. I have confidence in the NRCS and their ability and their lead hydrologist for this solution. I'm a government estimator myself, so I always aim high because you don't want to come back at folks with more money. So I believe that the estimate is probably conservative. So what we got going for us right now is we've got the oomph of the assembly. People have waited years to try to get permits for this on their own or small groups. Having a larger block gives us some momentum. If we think 20 people are going to agree on a solution and cough up $80,000, we're dreaming here. But we do have at least a $40,000 commitment. We have 75% of this funded right now that could go away. So we've got basically $3 for every dollar we put into it right now. That's not going to come around again. So I would caution against a rush to judgment just because the NRCS, we're finding out, may want to pull out or defer. I would like to have some due diligence on this matter and make sure you make an informed decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we wait just a second, please? Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else?
Sorry. Hello, Will Race, 3339 Meander Way. My wife and I submitted official public testimony, but just wanted to show up and voice that we're not supportive. We have not been supportive of this project for a multitude of reasons. We bought our house in 2014, right when this began. It was not disclosed to us. We asked about river erosion, and it was stated as it wasn't an issue from the home seller. We had the property measured to check to see if the original property specs matched what they currently are. There was no erosion. We did not get the original covenant that stated erosion was an issue. So for us, it's kind of a different take than some of these families in that we are a young family that just purchased a home. So just wanted to say that. And if there are any questions about that, it's interesting to me, just from a stance that people say that erosion is happening because we bought our house 2 years ago and the people said that had lived there for 30 years said it wasn't an issue. So It was kind of a shock test to get a letter in the mail, I think a couple months after we had moved in, that erosion was an issue. That's all.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Reyes? Mr. Q?
I missed something. You said you bought it 2 years ago or 2014?
I think we bought it 2015. It was right after the winter assessment was done. So whenever they did the NRCS did the first survey.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Reyes. Anyone else? Okay, I'll bring it back to the Assembly for discussion. May we have a motion, please?
Mr. Mayor, I guess I have some mild concern that there are seven of us here tonight, and this is a particularly big decision. I don't know from the city attorney if this is something that we can postpone until the next regularly scheduled meeting with the nine of us here. I know there are special rules about considering LIDs and notice. Is that something that we are able to do so that the full assembly can consider this question?
You are.
Okay.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, just one piece of information that I did not have in the published manager's report. As of today, we've tallied all of the objections and registrations of support. We've heard from 9 property owners that support the project, and we have heard from 9 property owners that oppose. I should say support the LID, and 9 that oppose the LID, and 8 that we have not heard from.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we postpone consideration of Ordinance 2018-13B to the next regularly scheduled assembly meeting.
Is there a discussion? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't want to do this. But I appreciate the rationale for having all 9 of us. No matter how it goes, it's best that we all have a say in this. I hopefully can work between now and the next meeting with the manager to talk about some of the potential solutions if this gets accepted or turned down, either one. So I agree with some of the testimony that started out with about 80-90% agreement, and somehow we ended up with a 50-50 split and higher cost than generally not the way we functioned before. Normally we can do a lot better. But to have eroding support from the project staff and the costs going up just seemed to be opposite of how many, many projects in this city have been done. And I'm disappointed in that. I remember the first home out there I visited was Mr. Yeager's. And, to see what he's done and the change of position that he's gone through is sort of emblematic of the problems that I see in this project too. So I'm going to support postponing it, but I take the comments that somehow we need to be able to help homeowners in some manner, permitting, sharing costs, doing something for those that are terribly impacted. So I will support this, but I would really hope that between now and that next meeting, we can work on some potential solutions to problems that remain no matter what we vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I oppose delaying this matter any further. These folks that live out in this affected neighborhood have waited a long time for this decision, and it's a very important one. I do agree. But the show must go on, whether we are all here or not. And I am prepared to make a decision on this matter tonight. It's something that we have been talking about for a long time. And the longer we wait, the longer these folks have to wait to make decisions as to how they're going to proceed to protect their homes. And I think that it would be in their best interest that we make a decision tonight. Granted, we will have the uncertainty from our two absent members tonight. But I think it's incumbent upon us to act quickly. We've dragged this out long enough.
Any other discussion?
Just to wrap up, Mr. Mayor, I appreciate how long this has taken, and it's a painful topic. Not near so painful for us as for the folks whose homes and finances we're talking about. I'm keenly aware of that. But 2 weeks or 3 weeks is not the difference of this construction season or the next. This is not queued up to go in the water this year. So I think that we can afford to have a full assembly consideration of a pretty big issue.
Madam Attorney, is that this a simple vote?
I'm sorry?
Is this a simple vote? In other words, it doesn't require any.
No.
Just wanted to affirm that before we started taking any vote here. Any other discussion? The clerk will please call the roll.
Okay. Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries to postpone. That would be May 14th.
That was till the next assembly meeting.
Yes.
May 14th.
All right. Ordinance 2018-14. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing the manager to lease a 0.05-acre fraction of parcel JPD 2, Track J1, located at 6235 and 6255 Alloway Avenue to the Federal Aviation Administration.
Okay, let's just wait a couple minutes and let the room clear out so we don't have... Okay, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, this manager's report refers to the following three ordinances. Ordinance 2018-14, 2018-15, and 2018-16 all concern the lease of property to the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, for the Juneau Airport Wind Systems JAWS. The FAA has utilized the lease property identified in the three ordinances since 1997. The proposed lease amount for all three leases is at less than fair market value pursuant to 5309-270A, allowing leases to government agencies for less than fair market value for public use. On March 20, 2017, the Lands Committee passed a motion of support for the leases to the FAA at no cost in order to ensure the continuation of the JAWS program. On June 16, 2017, the Planning Commission moved to forward the ordinance to the Assembly with a recommendation of approval. I recommend you adopt all three ordinances.
Is there a public comment? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we approve the three ordinances. Ordinance 2018-14, 2018-15, and 2018-16, and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection, Mr. Keel?
Only a question. Are we able to do three at a time, or do we have to take action separately? It's just a legal question. I got no objection to the ordinances.
Okay.
I think as long as the motion is clear, you could if you want to, or you could split it.
Let's just do this quickly and split it. Do it one at a time. So that there's that way. So your first one is Ms. Becker's ordinance 2018-14. Okay. Is there objection? Ordinance 2018-15. Mr. Edwardson, would you move that for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2018-15, and I recommend unanimous consent.
Is there objection? That also moved. Ordinance 2018-16. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2018-16 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the motion carried. Great. Ordinance 2018-17. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing the manager to execute a special use permit for the 6 pre-existing roadside city wood stove burn ban signs on state right-of-way with the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would facilitate the continued use of 6 wood stove burn ban signs in state rights-of-way. CBA uses signs to notify people when an air emergency is in effect in the Mendenhall Valley, and the state controls the right-of-way at 6 crucial locations. State law requires CBJ to obtain a permit for the use of the right-of-way. State law authorizes Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to require any permit conditions the agency deems necessary or in the best interests of the state. Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities right-of-way permit includes an indemnification provision. CBJ Charter 9.13A generally prohibits the CBJ from indemnifying others. However, Charter 913C allows CBJ to indemnify the state when CBJ would not otherwise be able to participate. This ordinance would allow the manager to execute the permit, including the indemnity provision. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I'd bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Weldon?
I move that we adopt 2018-17 and ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Ordinance 2018-18, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the City and Borough Code relating to criminal offenses and penalties for criminal mischief.
Mr. Manager.
Alaska Statute 1146-489 requires that upon conviction of certain offenses involving damage to public or private property, including criminal mischief, the defendant be sentenced to at least 25 hours of community work service. This ordinance would amend the CBJ's criminal mischief ordinance 4215-110 to include this mandatory penalty. This ordinance would also amend the ordinance to reduce the valuation cap between an A misdemeanor and a felony charge from $1,000 to $750, also consistent with and required by state law. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I will bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the Assembly approve Ordinance 2018-18 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the motion is carried. Ordinance 2018-19, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the City and Borough of Juneau Code relating to aquatic facilities.
Mr. Manager.
The Juneau voters approved the establishment of a new enterprise board to run the CBJ's aquatics facilities in October 2014. Subsequently, Ordinance 2015-23B amended the CBJ code to add a new aquatics facilities chapter and created the 7-member aquatics board. The ordinance specified that the new chapter would sunset on May 28, 2018. Over the past year, the Aquatics Board has been researching options for the future governance of the aquatics facilities. Public meetings were held on February 20th and February 28, 2018 to generate community feedback regarding four future governance options being considered by the Aquatics Board. On March 14, 2018, the Aquatics Board presented these four governance options to the Assembly Finance Committee. The Assembly Finance Committee unanimously voted to extend the term of the Aquatics Board through June 30, 2019 to allow for further research and consideration. The Assembly's intention was to leave the existing board members in place, which can be accomplished by motion. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I'll bring this back to the Assembly. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance Serial Number 2018-19 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none. We also need a motion to leave the existing board members in place through June 30th, 2019. Mr. Keel.
Mr. Mayor, I so move.
Is there discussion? Does anybody from the public wish to testify? Is there objection by the Assembly? Seeing and hearing none, the motion is carried. Unfinished business, Mr. Manager.
I have no unfinished business. Thank you.
New business. Granite Mountain Properties.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This is Granite Mountain Properties 2. If you recall, Granite Mountain Properties 1, which was also being heard by the Office of Administrative Hearings, the parties agreed to a stipulated dismissal, which you approved at a previous assembly meeting recently. This is the second of the Granite Mountain Properties appeals. The applicant, the appellant, decided to withdraw the appeal. The hearing officer has drafted an order allowing the withdrawal of the appeal, and this is now before you to approve or reject.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this?
Here.
Okay. Seeing that, Ms. Becker, would you move to accept the hearings officer order dismissing this appeal?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly accept the hearing officer's order dismissing this appeal and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, Terraces at Lawson Creek versus CBJ Assessor 2018 Notice of Appeal.
On March 7, 2018, the CBJ assessor denied a request from the Terraces at Lawson Creek owned by Juno 1 VOA LLC, Juno 2 VOA LLC, and Intrepid VOA LLC for charitable use exemption status for parcels located at 2570 and 5278 Vista Drive in Juno. On April 6, 2018, an appeal of the assessor's decision was filed. In accordance with the appeals code, you must now decide whether to accept or reject the appeal. If you determine, after liberally construing the notice of appeal in order to preserve the rights of the appellant, that there has been a failure to comply with the appellate rules, or if the notice of appeal does not state grounds upon which any of the relief requested may be granted, you may reject the appeal. If the appeal is accepted, you must decide if you will hear the appeal yourself, or if you will appoint a hearing officer. If you decide to hear the appeal yourself, you will need to appoint a presiding officer. In hearing this appeal, the Assembly sits in its quasi-judicial capacity, and you must avoid discussing the case outside of the hearing process.
Okay, our first decision is whether to accept or reject the appeal. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that we accept the appeal. And I would add to that motion that we assign the appeal to a hearing officer.
Okay, well, let's do it one at a time. All right.
So you move to accept the appeal on behalf of the Assembly?
Yes.
Is there objection to that? Hearing none, that carried. Mr. Jones?
I would move that we assign this to a hearing officer.
Okay. Is there discussion? Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I understand that the Office of Public Appeals, I think that's the right name, and Department of Law, Administrative, is finalizing the Seal Trust appeal, which is a similar issue. Seventh-day Adventists, they settled, but there were still some hanging legal questions. Since we have several attorneys that are on the city side and the assessor side, and our own attorney probably has to declare a conflict, I would not like to have us nine people sit through that. And I think there's just a matter of law, and some of them may get settled if on the seal trust, maybe not, but I think this is better done by an appeal hearing officer.
Okay, the motion is to assign the appeal to a hearing officer. Is there further discussion?
Question.
Mr. Keel.
Just a question for the city attorney about, and I apologize, apologize for springing this on you. I didn't give you a heads up. Do you know roughly what has been spent on the Office of Administrative Hearing Services and the Seal Trust appeal so far?
Actually, I do not, because that does not come out of law's budget. That comes out of your budget.
Madam Clerk?
Currently, the $10,000 for a hearing officer has been spent to date in FY18. And about $200 over. So there may be some additional bills coming in from what's out there now.
Yes.
So we'll need to find some funds for that.
Mr. Mayor, I guess I share Mr. Jones' optimism that the technical legal questions in the Seal Trust appeal will shed a lot of light on this one, too, in terms of interpretation. So I'm optimistic that this one will be cheaper.
Okay. Further discussion? The motion before you is to assign this to a hearing officer. Is there objection?
Mr. Mayor, before you vote, may I just ask a
clarifying
question? There was discussion about the Office of Administrative Hearings. Is the motion to send it to that entity or to just find a hearing
officer? It was just a hearing officer. Okay. Back to the Assembly. Is there objection? Motion is carried. Liquor license protest recommendation. Madam Clerk, it's the Tides Complex.
Tides Complex Incorporated, doing business as Dragon Inn Chinese Cuisine Incorporated.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, I would be looking for an update from Mr. Keel, who I believe chaired the HRC this evening, immediately before this meeting, on this topic.
Okay, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee did meet just before the Assembly meeting tonight, and the licensee did not appear at the Human Resources Committee meeting. Human Resources Committee recommends that the Assembly protest the liquor license renewal for Tides Complex, doing business as Dragon Inn Chinese Cuisine, on the basis of fire code violations. I don't know if the applicant is here at the Assembly meeting. If so, they get the chance to speak, but that's the recommendation from Human Resources.
Right. Is there anyone here from the Dragon Inn? Okay, have you heard, everyone heard the recommendation from the Human Resource Committee? Is there objection to that recommendation? Recommendation carries.
Staff reports. Douglas Highway Water Main Project update.
Mr. Manager. Mr. Mayor, I actually do not have an update on that project. I thought I would have one, but I will give you a staff report at the next meeting, next regularly scheduled meeting in May.
Thank you. 450 Whittier Street, Public Safety Building, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, at the Finance Committee last Wednesday, I gave a fairly extensive update on the Mental Health Trust's offer to sell the 450 Whittier property, a.k.a. Public Safety Building, directly to the CBJ. In that finance packet, there was extensive backup information. The direct purchase price from the trust is $488,231. That price would be, in my opinion, above fair market value. I may not purchase property above fair market value except upon approval of the assembly by motion. So tonight I'm asking you for a motion directing acquisition of 450 Whittier for $488,231.
Is there a motion? Ms. Weldon?
So moved.
Discussion, please. Is there objection? Motion carried.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
On the same topic?
Yes.
I move that the assembly direct the manager, in keeping with the Willoughby District plan, that the 450 Whittier Street property, if acquired, should not be surface parking for more than a short-term period.
Okay, is there a discussion? Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I will object. Usually Mr. Keel is much more clear than short-term as a definition of how long it shouldn't be surface parking. I actually thought he was probably going to make a motion that they not take the building down, but he didn't make that one. I think that unduly hampers the manager's hands in terms of planning, and I know the manager is looking at trying to, if the building comes down, to do it not in a hurried manner, so hopefully it's cheaper. If somebody can salvage a lot, then maybe the cost of taking it down changes. And definition of short term, just not there. We approved the lease on another piece of property for parking that was 6 months and then month to month. I don't see why the manager wouldn't bring back a similar thing, since I'm sure that this parking will probably end up being state parking as well, and would be added to the existing lease. So I don't see any reason to support this kind of motion. Thank you.
Okay.
Speak to the motion.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to speak to the motion, frankly, using this lot of surface parking at all without this motion is totally inconsistent with our Willoughby District plan, and the Planning Commission should say no. So the reason I make the motion is to give some flexibility to the manager. He made a case at our Finance Committee meeting, and then throughout the discussions of the leases agreed to tonight for some surface parking elsewhere, about the need in the short term. And I think that he made some good points. But I think the Willoughby District Plan is a really important document. And it clearly calls for us not to add to this sea of gray parking space that is a commerce killer in that area. It calls for us to break up those super blocks, to facilitate
walkable, developable parcels, which is the opposite of surface parking, to make the district easier and safer to walk through, which is the opposite of striped parking lots, to, where did I put it here, to add dwelling units, to add businesses, to accommodate parking under and behind buildings, in garages and with more on-street spaces. I mean, it's explicit in the Willoughby District plan. So without some sort of policy direction from the Assembly, frankly, it's hard for me to imagine the Planning Commission allowing the manager's interim plan to take this building down and use it for some parking. I didn't define short-term on purpose, but I also didn't want to leave it unsaid. Unwalkable seas of surface parking increase only one thing, demand for more parking. But there's no place to live, and there's no place to shop, and there's nothing to do, and there's nothing to see, and it's exactly why the Willoughby District Plan calls for the opposite sort of development than what this admittedly will need to be in the short term. So we can take a short-term step, but I think it's important that the Assembly, in giving permission for the short-term step, stick up for the long-term plan that we've duly adopted.
Any further discussion? Mr. Edwardson.
I support the motion, although I wonder if it can be made more precise, and I'm still trying to think about how to do that. But these plans need to mean something. We ask these people to go out, create these plans. We have public engagement. And we have people who care about these areas who come up with plans for them. We agree to them. More parking. You know, when I can't find parking, more parking is fine. But I do agree with the plan that there should be something in that area in addition to or besides parking. I guess the one thing that I was thinking is, can we sunset? Can we give an approval with a sunset and say that it has to be revisited again in, say, 5 years? Or 3 years?
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, in response to Mr. Edwardson's question, I can't quite think of a way to do that. I hear the comments of Mr. Keel, and I think a couple things. Short term is ambiguous, and we are talking about taking down a temporary building that has
50 some years, right?
50 some years later. So I would hope that recognizing the goals of the Willoughby District Plan, short term doesn't mean that long. However, in order to do something better in that district, it's going to take successive action by assemblies. So it's going to take future appropriations for a parking structure. It's going to take future land management decisions about carving up the land differently. It's going to take micro planning of exactly what happens on the Centennial Hall Arts Council campus properties. So I believe that it will be before the Assembly in a variety of ways if future assemblies retain their focus on the area. And I believe what Mr. Keel is trying to do is acknowledge that it's a priority of this Assembly to maintain that focus and not let this be that final step. So I think it's that intent language that he's trying to embed in this action. And I understand what he's trying to do, and I don't have any objection to it. And I think if the Assembly just agrees upon that intent, if the intent of this Assembly that continued focus be made in that area, so that long-term parking is not a permanent solution, and it is the intent that future assemblies understand
that purpose and that they allocate resources towards implementing the Willoughby District Plan's goals.
Further discussion? Hearing none, I speak against the motion. I think that we do have plans. I think we know where we should be going on this one. I don't think that a short-term parking is going to interfere with those plans. And I think it should be dealt with as short-term parking. So. All right. Well, the clerk, please call the roll.
Can we restate the motion again, please?
Motion by Keel to direct the city manager that the property not be used for surface parking for more than a short term, as indicated in the Willoughby plan.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, I believe Ms. Weldon moved the original motion, which was my request.
That already passed.
That already passed. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Which is to buy it.
Right, that passed.
Go ahead. And
perfect. All right. Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Ms. Weldon?
No.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
No.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
No.
Motion fails 3-4.
All right, ready to move on. Parks and Rec Department update.
Good evening. I just have a quick couple of things here. I'd like to start out by thanking the city manager and the deputy city manager, this assembly and assemblies in the past for allowing me this great opportunity to serve the city and borough of Juneau. It's been really unique starting at Eagle Crest and then doing public works and parks and rec. It's a great city. I'm also very excited to announce, or it's already been announced, but George Schaff is our new parks and rec director. George comes to us with previous CBJ experience in superintendent of park maintenance and landscaping. He was executive director of Trail Mix, and most recently he's coming to us from the U.S. Forest Service. So George has a great wealth of knowledge, and I think it'll be very good for the department. I want to give you just an update on where the department is. Back in December of 2014, Jim Hall was contracted to do a report on the department. There was a fair amount of negativity in that report. We had some issues with poor guest experience that led to things like the Aquatics Advisory Board and the Aquatics Empowered Board. We had low staff morale, and that's all turned around due to the work of a lot of folks. As part of the report, we created a master planning process, which will be presented to the Park and Rec Advisory Committee, the Planning Commission, and the Assembly in the fall, and moving forward with that master planning process. It's been pushed back a little bit. I'd hoped that it would be available to us but before I left, but Project Playground sort of pushed that a little bit. Zach Gordon, we took over the after-school program. We were requested to take that over. Jordan Nigro and her staff have really grown that program. We created youth employment in the parks with funding with SAIL through a state agency. We hired a youth outreach coordinator, partially paid by the Juneau Community Foundation. And most recently, we just moved all of our youth sports over to Zach Gordon, so we have one concentration of youth services out of Zach Gordon rather than out of the main office and Zach Gordon. Real focus for the department going forward is youth services. And, of course, Zach and Jordan Nigro work really well with our community partners and other service agencies to increase what we do for the youth of the community. Adult sports, you may or may not know this, but pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the United States, especially among seniors. And we use Centennial Hall, and we just wanted to do a pilot program. There were four courts down there, and there were days when we had 80 people down there playing pickleball. So that's going to be a focus for us going forward. We also did a poll and through the master planning process and told us that seniors want more activities like yoga and fitness classes. So we'll be working on that. Eagle Valley Center is breaking even operationally. And so it's a great venue for meetings and for outdoor activities. Treadwell Ice Arena continues to provide great investment to the community with over 60% cost recovery. The pools, I think we've had a lot of conversation about the pools. The main thing is that we've been able to reduce the general fund support by 14% over the last couple of years. So we're moving in the right direction by increasing revenue and decreasing expenses. The trail system, that's what's really been interesting for me. 80% of the people in Juneau say that they use our trails. And it's also very interesting because that's actually the place where we spend the least amount of money. And so we'll be doing after we do our master plan, then we'll start doing a trails plan. And I think we'll be coming back to you with the desire to increase the amount of money we spend on trails. As the Juneau Economic Development, the Finance Committee, Brian, was talking about the possibility of getting people to come in here, be telecommuters from places like Microsoft. They're looking for a high quality of life, and trails are definitely something that we offer here. So the takeaway is, I think, for me, is we're just going to have to spend some more money on trails. But again, I just want to thank the manager's office, thank you, and thank the community for the ability to serve the community for 13 and a half years. So thank you very much. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about anything related to Parks and Rec. Thank you.
Hold on. You weren't here for this one, so you got a separate one. Just want to point out that two directors, Kirk Duncan and Roger Healy, who mistakenly thought they could sneak out of their last assembly meeting without being acknowledged.
Damn.
Whereas if government is only good as the men and women who work for that government, then the city and borough of Juneau is at its finest because of extraordinary public service of Kirk Duncan and Roger Healy. We acknowledge you and thank you and wish you would have been here when I read it the first time. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Do we need a break, or do we want to just go right into this because we want to stay until 11 anyway?
Mr. Mayor, I have some important gifts to hand out that we no longer need.
Thank you, sir.
That's brutal. Is that the second or the third version of that?
I think we've had several healings.
All right, standing now, come on.
It's a good time to heal when you're retired.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Enjoy.
Thank you, and enjoy the next chapter.
Thanks for your work.
I'm ready to fall off.
Thank you all. Do we need a break?
A couple minutes.
Five.
Yeah.
All right. So 22. One of the.
We're live and we're local, KTOO Juneau at 104.3. The time is 9:34, and we are listening to the City and Borough of Juneau regularly scheduled meeting. Tonight, showers low around 41. Tomorrow, rain low around 40. And Wednesday, rain likely, mainly before 10 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 39. That was Wednesday night. Wednesday, rain likely, mostly cloudy, with a high near 45. Thursday, a 40% chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a high near 48. And Friday through Monday, partly sunny, going up to 50 degrees on Saturday. The assembly's gone on about a five-minute break, and we'll listen to music.
Captain Jack's when I fell on my back. I broke my Casio watch. Hey, Rudy, help me down to the ferry. The ferry's already gone. So I caught me a ride on the outgoing tide. Oh, God, I don't want to go. I've left my footprints on a beach at Waikiki, by the coastline of Barbados, at the shore of Martinique. I've broken many hearts, so many lost affairs, but there's one that stole my soul. Between here and there, some call her a lady, some call her the sea, some call her the ocean, a place to be free. Atlantic, Pacific, or the Gulf Stream. She's wild and she's crazy, the ultimate dream. Don't try and change her, she's warm and she's cold. When stormy or tranquil, she's in control.
She's deep and she's mighty. She gives her bounty. Oh, how I love her, the lady of the sea. Pacific or the Gulf Stream. She's wild and she's crazy, the ultimate dream. Don't try and change her, she's warm and she's cold. When stormy or tranquil, she's in control. She's deep and she's mighty. She gives her bounty.
Mayor's report. The purpose people come to these meetings. All right. The fundraiser for the Haven House, reentry home for women. Good example of Alaskan and Juneau generosity. The Capital Blend Band, comprised of Alaska legislators and staff, helped raise over $64,000. That is phenomenal. Remember, that's the same band that played the year before and raised over $100,000 for Project Playground. Was also able to see the Juneau generosity at the community gathering and outpouring of support for Cindy Bohe. Lines were out the door at the Moose Lodge, and there were hundreds of people inside for a dinner and an auction. Again, Juneau coming together. Speaking of Juneau coming together, the Tlingit Haida Assembly and Banquet this past week was exceptional. I was especially touched by the tribute to and the response of Gil Truitt of Sitka. That was for a Lifetime Achievement Award. Our sympathy to Jenny Klein. She was Juneau City and Borough Mayor from 1975 to 1976. Her husband, Phil Chitwood, recently died. And if you look back on those pictures back there, you see that Mr. Chitwood also served on the assembly. This fall will be commemorating the sinking and the loss of life on the Princess Sophia, one of the worst disasters in Juneau history. There were some recent articles in the media recently about a more recent history when a fire broke out on the Princess Dam in 1980. The evacuation of 519 crew and passengers was one of the largest rescues in modern maritime history. Juneau resident Dick Knapp was the admiral of the 17th Coast Guard District when that occurred. I was working for Customs then, and I remember that Juneau residents gathered blankets, clothing, food, and prepared to open their house to the passengers and crew, most of which we did not have to do because they went to Yakutat or Sitka. But while 519 crew and passengers were rescued under the command of Admiral Knapp. And congratulations to Regional Forester Beth Pendleton on her retirement celebration this coming Wednesday. I think we have a meeting this coming Wednesday.
by someone we know, so most of us will be unable to attend, but we send our good wishes. And that's the mayor's report. Committee report, liaison reports, assembly comments, and questions. Ms. Becker, and we'll go down the line.
Thank you. We talked about the parking fine. That was a big issue at the airport board meeting. There was also quite a lengthy talk about the dike trail and how it's kind of blocking emergency vehicles if people don't get off of it when they hear a vehicle coming. And so they're going to maybe put up more signs and do some education. And I'm glad that was the decision rather than let's close it down. So they're going to also have a public meeting to discuss the dike trail and the parking lot problems, because there's a lot of drug use, evidence of drug use in the parking lot out there. Some of the suggestions include updating the lighting, putting in toilets. I don't know how that will help with that, but nevertheless, that was a suggestion. And trying to get more police presence out there. We heard a report about snow removal and heard a lot about, and we did it only with this many people. And so afterwards I asked, how many people do you think you need? He said, well, we're really okay because we don't have enough room to put more people out on the, you know, on the runway or anything. So I don't know why we heard that so much. I think the name of the new food distributor is Windfall. Anybody know? I don't know why I didn't write that down, but I think that's it. Because what's the hangar's name? The official name. That's the same as this one, but it's not the hangar. This is a company from down south. Anyway, the next airport board meeting is May 8th. The Alaska Committee, and they're planning for the state fairs that are going to come this summer. The Tanana Valley State Fair will be August 3rd to August 11th. The Alaska State Fair in Palmer, August 23 to September 3. Alaska Airlines is giving us 2 round-trip tickets for each of the fairs, and we're going to have a meeting in the next couple of weeks to make some decisions about how we'll work out giving those tickets to winners of doing something, whatever. And Wayne's going to call a meeting about the fairs. The legislative move effort is still occurring, even though we're not hearing as much about it. We're predicting that it'll probably occur on the 2020 election, after 2020 election. We also talked about the 2018 JEDC visitor survey, which is not finished, but it's getting there. The next meeting will be May 9. The chamber was having a meeting every Thursday at the hangar, ready to move back to the Moose. We heard at this last meeting, we heard about Seattle's preschool program for 3 and 4 year olds, and it's paid for by a levy. And this year, it had a deadline. It had a 5-year type trial. And this year they're going to have a vote to decide if the people want to finance it again with a levy and extend it. And I went to Pillars. Very, very, very interesting. I saw a few of you there. And then to Cindy Bohan's fundraiser, which was amazing. I've never seen so many people in one place, I tell you. And then also the ribbon cutting at the airport, where all of you were. So that was kind of neat.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Becker. Mr. Steele.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll start with Human Resources Committee, which, as I mentioned earlier, met just before the assembly meeting. We dealt with the one action item on the agenda. There was an informational item as well that was not in the packet. The state's alcohol and marijuana control office, this is the alcohol side, has not renewed the tourism bar license at the Frontier Suites. In case that comes up, the city waived its protest at a previous meeting. That's not a city issue, that's a state issue, in case you get asked or it comes to your radar. We have not protested that. The Finance Committee has met 3 times since our last regular assembly meeting.
I'm prepared to go through all the agendas in detail. Oh, no, wait. How about this? We have considered presentations and budget submissions by the School Board, Juneau Economic Development Council, the Small Business Development Center, the Docks and Harbors Board, the Airport Board, the Aquatics Board, Travel Juneau, and the Juneau Community Foundation. We've also looked at the Capital Improvement Program and the Marine Passenger Fees. Most of those items, we have approved the budgets that's submitted by the manager. There are a few items, potential changes on our pending list to be dealt with later in the budget process. We also approved the, let me get this right, the manufacturing business personal property exemption, export exemption. I got those words in the wrong order, applications. there is more fun at finance yet to come. You have should have packets on either on your desk or in your mailbox upstairs for this Wednesday's meeting. We will continue our weekly meetings until the budget is completed, and we have recently rescheduled the May 2nd meeting for May 3. May 3rd, yes, because I will be at the Alaska Municipal League Board of Directors meeting, unable to attend May 2. So thank you to everyone who, for responding to the clerk's emails about your availability for that. Shifting to the Municipal League, we continue to monitor the renamed Revenue Sharing Program, which is something like community assistance these days. So far, it remains fully funded at the statewide $30 million a year level for both last year and this, which should keep the payout level. Fingers crossed that that doesn't change as the legislature wraps up. There is also an item that AML has worked on that the CBJ has been particularly interested in and directed our staff and lobbyists to work on, and that is a fix for the sales tax collection for what they call transportation network companies. We think of Uber and Lyft. That fix language sits in a bill that's waiting for its final vote in the Senate, at which point it would head to the governor's desk. My understanding is that it is agreed to by the companies, by the original sponsors of the transportation network company legislation, the league has endorsed the language, so hopefully that won't get dropped in the final week of, or two-ish of session. Let's see. I think Ms. Becker mentioned the ribbon cutting at the snow removal equipment building. That is a fabulous facility. It is a wonder. I think there's room to play an NFL game in there. I don't even know if kickoff would hit the rafters. That's a heck of a facility. So that should keep our snow removal equipment in much better shape and require replacing it a lot less often. Had the opportunity to go to part of the March for Education / March for Science on the Capitol steps a week or two ago. Folks advocating for more state investment in K-12 education. Also, the University of Alaska Fairbanks Fisheries Science Center at Lena Point had a sort of a two-day public event on Friday. I'm going to forget the dates. This was 2 weeks ago, I believe. Friday, they presented faculty and student research, and on Saturday, they had an incredible event aimed toward kids. Families were welcome, but they had all different kinds of seaweed out there. You could reach in and touch it and ask questions at any level from why is it ooky to tell me more about the reproductive cycle of this thing and the flagellates, and it was, and so on and so forth through any number of research projects going on out there. You had PhDs and PhD students and folks doing postdocs ready to answer questions from you, me, and the four-year-olds. It was great. And so I applaud them very much for that. I will flag for assembly members on Thursday the 26th out at on Back Loop Road. The Forest Service has the next of their glacier, Mendenhall Glacier, recreation area planning events. That's an ongoing process. They've been actively engaged. I believe that starts at 4 p.m. And so I encourage folks to be involved in that. And that's it for me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Gale. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Public Works and Facilities Committee met a week or two ago. Had a couple information items on electric vehicle charges and wayfinding. We meet again on the 30th, Monday. Be Mr. Healy's last day and his replacement's first day. Also, there will be a special meeting of the Public Works and Facilities Committee on Tuesday, the 8th of May, starting at noon, single topic, Recycle Works, which will include a field trip out to look at the recycle issues and things out at the waste dump and other places. So plan on a couple hours if you want to attend, or you can come and sit and listen, and then the rest of us will go touring and you can go back to work or whatever. Juneau School District met on the 17th of April. Not much to report there. Their next meeting is May 8th. But they do have a retreat on Saturday the 5th. It was just rescheduled to from the end of April. I'm trying to find out exactly what the topic of that retreat is, but that seems to be a hidden event. It says it's there, but it doesn't say what the topic is. And I haven't been able to get a response to any emails. Downtown Business Association met last week. They continue to be concerned about downtown safety issues. They're continuing to plan for the tourism uptick and what will be taking place sometime after the 30th this month. Some concerns about the downtown construction, but I've gone to most of the Tuesday meetings where they meet with business owners on the construction project. I think Lori Soa has done a terrific job of listening and trying to answer questions, but they would like it to have been done in 2 days, and it's not getting done in 2 days, and the frustration is growing. There is a DIG meeting, a Downtown Improvement Group meeting, at 9 o'clock on the 27th, Friday morning. It's both on tourism growth this summer, but also the Juneau Police Department will be there to talk about issues downtown, is what I understand. I attended the Commission on Aging, still a work in progress, but they did change their dates. They're going to be meeting on the second Tuesday of the month instead of the third. One of the members we appointed couldn't make the third one. Several of them couldn't make the fourth, so they've settled on the second, and they think that everybody can attend. May is Older Alaskans Month. And as part of that, the Juneau Commission on Aging is going to sponsor a 2-hour coffee event on May 20th at the Pioneer Home. And part of the state's Older Alaskans Commission celebration has been trying to identify in communities persons that are in those communities that are over the age of 100. There are apparently 5 in Juneau. And at the Commission on Aging meeting, it was acknowledged that one of them has responded to the commission and will be there on May 20th. And I know they talked about inviting the mayor. If they haven't talked to you specifically, you might put that out there, not because you're 100, but because you're mayor.
Yeah, referring to the 100.
Yeah, well, you have enough white hair. You'll do fine. And it's 2 to 4. I'm sure there'll be a lot more information coming out about that. Also, I attended the last Visitors Product Cluster meeting. They won't meet again until September after the tourist season. But as you heard from JADC when they presented to the Finance Committee, they too are very much concerned about how Juneau, in particular, is going to handle an increase to 1.3 or more million visitors coming. Just a couple other dates. May 5th is the Blessing of the Fleet. I think I had said at another meeting May 5th was the Maritime Festival. It's actually May 12th. Luckily, Beth McEwen caught that and fixed a minute, so I sounded like I knew what I was talking about, but if you listen to the tape, it was a wrong date. And then just for comments, I really do want to sit down with the manager and maybe Mr. Healy and talk about Meanderway. And, you know, I don't know what, but it seems like we just can't leave the homeowners out there hanging loose. So I really do want to talk about that. And also, and I know the Marijuana Committee talked about this in the past, but there's an issue that's come up, and I have had multiple conversations with law. And in state regulations, there's a distance between where places can be in correctional facilities and churches and schools and those kind of places. Because there's nothing in our ordinances, our planning commission doesn't go out and measure. They don't go out and certify anything. The state doesn't have the resources to, for 100 applications to go to 25 communities and measure all this. One thing that could allow us to be a little different than others, since we do have in Title 49 a section on marijuana and what has to be in the conditional use permit, I would like permission to work with law to see if we could work out some language that would put those distances in hours so that the Planning Commission could actually look at those when they do the mandatory conditional use permits. I don't know if I'll bring anything back. I don't know if law and I can agree, but I'd like an okay to at least look at that issue.
Okay, is there any objection?
Okay, that's my report.
Ms. Weldon, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Planning Commission is continuing to work on the Ock Bay implementation plan, and they'll be talking about that. They'll be talking about their progress at their next meeting. Staff is assembling material with regard to the downtown plan for their discussion at their next meeting, and the Comprehensive Plan Committee will start meeting in May, and their next meeting is tomorrow, the 24th at 7 p.m. here. Aquatics Board, the board was just extended to continue their work on their sunset options. The pool's budget was approved in the last finance committee. And Lauren Anderson, the Treadwell Arena manager, will be the interim aquatics manager. So I'd like to do a shout-out to Julie Jackson for a job well done and wish her good luck in her next chapter. And their next board meeting is May 1st in room 224. For comments, I had a lovely tour of the hospital ER after enjoying the local trails and finding the last patch of ice on the trails. So the hospital ER is very nice. Then I got to enjoy the Southeast Swim Meet, and many of the general swimmers are headed to Junior Olympics this Thursday in Anchorage. I attended the Glacier Valley Rotary's first pillar speaker, and the mayor was there. And there's two other ones, if anybody hasn't gone there, great things to go to. I, too, got to go to the airport shop ribbon-cutting ceremony, and it was fun to see the former shop employees that I hadn't seen in a while. The sad news that we have is April 6th, we said goodbye to a great Juneau citizens and Talker River rat, Rudy Ripley. And, unfortunately, this month we've lost three former Capital City Fire Rescue firefighters, Jeff Newkirk, Rick Duncan, and Galen Brevik. On the happy note for the fire department, most of us just on Saturday celebrated the 90th birthday for Doug Boddy, our former CBJ fire chief. So happy birthday to Doug. And good luck to all the high schoolers taking their SAT tomorrow. And remind people that Wednesday is Administrative Assistant Day, and most of us in CBJ could not get along without our admin assistant. So make sure you say thank you to them. And I'm done.
Thank you, Ms. Welton. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Eagle Crest Board last met on April 5th. They've received feedback from the Nordic Ski Community that the Nordic Ski Community has been happy with the cross-country trail grooming on the lower loop up at Eagle Crest. The Nordic Ski Community has signed an agreement with Eagle Crest for grooming, where they're going to take over grooming on that lower trail. It's been signed by both parties. It is now being reviewed by risk management, and then I believe it goes to Mr. Watt for his signature. So people seem to be happy about that. The Eagle Crest Cabin Committee is still working to determine, you know, the type of foundation, whose responsibility the cabin's going to be, access to the cabin that they're looking at building up at Eagle Crest. So that is still in the works. Stay tuned. The Eagle Crest manager, Dave, appreciated the questions from the assembly regarding Eagle Crest, and especially with the focus on snowmaking during the tough weather years. Dave, our Eagle Crest manager, is meeting with a contractor, I believe, this week to analyze Juno's snowmaking abilities. So stay tuned for more information on that. That is currently funding for the snowmaking is on our pending list as we work through the finance budget. Dave, the Eagle Crest manager, is still working on getting a mountain bike feasibility study completed, and he is looking to diversify our revenue. It's been experienced at some hills similar to Eagle Crest in the lower 48 that over 60% of their annual revenue is coming as being made during the summer through mountain biking. The board is working on the general manager's evaluation. The next Eagle Crest board meeting is on May 3rd at 5:30 here at City Hall in room 224. The Parks and Recreation Committee recently met. Let me pull my notes for that one. They met on Tuesday, April the 3rd. They continue to have discussions about dog-free trails in Juneau. They're looking to identify at least several trails where people can go and not have to worry about encountering a dog. It's been discussed that there are several of those trails already in Juneau, so they continue their work on that. One of the committee members for Parks and Recreation has been looking into off-highway vehicle areas and is promoting a website to try to gain feedback from people in our community regarding what types of activities they like with regard to off-highway vehicles. And so that project, it continues to move forward. And that's all I have to report.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Mr. Reddick?
Question, Mr. Reddick?
Certainly.
Just a question for Mr. Gregory. Is the intention to change the area that the Assembly has designated for a future off-highway vehicle park, or to develop the idea in the location that we chose, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
You know, that is a good question. I was not aware that the Assembly had designated an area for off-highway vehicles. Where would that be, Mr.
30 mile?
38.
38 mile?
Oh, interesting. No, that location has not come up, but I'll be sure to share that with them at their next meeting. It's really been just trying to analyze, you know, what type of off-highway vehicles people would like to be able to use around the area, and just seeing how much support is out there for that idea. Yes, I'll be sure to share.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Edwards. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I missed most of my meetings this month, so this isn't going to be long. But the reason I missed them is no longer there, so I should be making all of them coming up. One of the things that I want to bring up is Dribblers League, the tournament that goes on here, I think, annually. It kind of gets overshadowed sometimes by a gold medal tournament. There were 38 teams here for the Mike Jackson shootout, 38 teams in six different categories. And these are all children from around Southeast Alaska. And I kind of have a warm spot in my heart for it since all of my nieces and my daughter played Dribblers League. So that happens in late March, in case you're interested next year. The mayor, he mentioned the banquet. It's the president's award banquet. It covered, or it, it
recognized eight people. Dr. Gilbert Truitt, who was a long time, he got a Lifetime Achievement Award for his longtime leadership of the Mount Edgecombe School. Other categories covered were language preservation, inspiring educators, youth mentors, and it was just a great gathering of people and ideas, and I would encourage you to attend in the future. The banquet itself was part of the 83rd Annual Tribal Assembly for Clinkin Haida Tribes, and along with the assembly where they elect their delegates and where they elect their leadership, they had the Women's March. And the Women's March covered two different things. It covered basically violence against women, people marching against violence against women, and also missing an indigenous woman, which in the United States and Canada is a huge problem compared to its population size. And Ms. Becker mentioned Seattle Best Starts. There was a great presentation on that, and I think it was kind of a good tee-up to, I think we're going to be having a Juno Best Starts presentation in a week or two here as part of the Assembly Finance Committee. And that's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. All right, it's 12 after. So, as far as I know, no presiding officer reports. Bye, Roger. Continuation. Jim, do you want to talk? Continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Seeing none, we need a motion to go into executive session. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the Assembly recess into executive session to discuss matters the immediate knowledge of which could clearly have a detrimental effect on the City and Borough of Juneau, specifically litigation updates.
Is there any discussion from or objection from the audience or from the Assembly?